Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. This week, the coronavirus officially landed here in Florida. On Sunday, Governor Ron DeSantis announced the first two cases here in the state and declared a public health state of emergency. Then the CDC confirmed those cases.
A third case was confirmed on Tuesday. A fourth was announced and confirmed by the CDC today. Testing for the virus is not widespread. The state's guidelines for who should get tested is narrower than the CDC's criteria. State officials say they don't have enough resources yet, like test kits, to provide the wider checkups.
People across the state have so many questions about this. So we're going to start the Florida Roundup this Friday with the latest on coronavirus. In a moment, an infectious disease specialist will join us. And right now, we want to know, what questions do you have about COVID-19? Have you changed your routine in response to the threat of coronavirus? Maybe even gone to try to get tested? Give us a call. It's 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800, tweets to @FloridaRoundup.
But first, Dr. Shamariel Robertson is the Deputy Secretary for Health in Florida. Dr. Robertson, welcome to the Florida Roundup. Who should get tested? What are the guidelines now from your department, the Department of Florida, to Floridians about who should get tested for COVID-19?
So right now we have a clinical screening tool for identifying persons under investigation for COVID-19. So if a person have traveled to or from an affected area, that area is China, South Korea, Iran, Italy, or Japan, and these are countries with widespread or sustained community transmission, if that person have had a fever and symptoms of lower respiratory illness, examples would include cough, shortness of breath, then that patient meets the criteria as a patient under investigation for COVID-19. If a person has had close contact with a laboratory-confirmed COVID-19 patient, if they have a fever or symptoms of lower respiratory illness, that is cough, shortness of breath, then they meet the criteria as a patient under investigation for COVID-19. And then the other criteria is if a person with severe acute lower respiratory illness and they've had a fever that requires hospitalization, and if that person hasn't had an alternative explanatory diagnosis like influenza, then they meet the criteria as a person under investigation. If a healthcare provider has additional questions about whether or not a person should be tested for COVID-19, they can reach out to the local county health department and speak to an epidemiologist to assess the current situation.
Doctor, as you know, the Centers for Disease Control this week expanded their guidelines regarding who should get tested for COVID-19, putting a lot of trust into medical professionals and doctors, whether or not they would prescribe, so to speak, those tests. Should the Florida Department of Health follow those CDC guidelines and expand the potential pool of Floridians who could get tested?
So we are adhering to recommendations from CDC. We have that is a clinical screening tool for persons under investigation for COVID-19. And additionally, if healthcare providers, have people that may meet this criteria and they suspect that they have COVID-19, we are open to them calling the epidemiologist and testing if the healthcare provider and the epidemiologist feel that that's necessary for the patient.
Is there a difference between open to calling the health department as you're guiding versus the CDC guidelines that are putting kind of that decision into the hands of the medical professional, the doctor, him or herself?
We're adhering to the CDC's recommendation. And we are working with all healthcare providers and our epidemiology staff to ensure that persons that are suspected to have COVID-19 are tested for COVID-19.
But just so we're clear, the doctor, if there's a suspected case, the doctor would still have to go through a local county Department of Health in Florida to get that testing approved, essentially. Is that right?
At this time, if a healthcare provider reaches out to the Florida Department of Health, and they suspect that a patient has COVID-19, we will work with that healthcare provider to get those persons tested for COVID-19.
How many testing kits are necessary in Florida by your estimation?
So let me explain that a little bit. That's a good question. So testing kits from the CDC were kits that were sent to our public health laboratory. We have three public health laboratories in the state of Florida, one in Jacksonville, one in Tampa, and one in Miami. Those testing kits are used to actually perform the laboratory test for COVID-19. At this time, to date, we are running the test for COVID-19. There are additional announcements that will come today as commercial tests with different private companies become available for COVID-19, and we will work with healthcare providers to operationalize those testing protocols for persons with COVID-19.
Those new announcements expected today, the commercially available tests, are those tests that will be for and conducted by Department of Health personnel, or those will be conducted, for instance, in healthcare facilities?
If commercial laboratories have been approved by the Federal and Drug Administration to conduct COVID-19 tests, they will work in partnership with the Florida Department of Health per their FDA agreement to adhere to their testing protocol.
I see. You're talking specifically about laboratories to conduct the test, not the testing kits themselves, then.
So a testing kit is actually the kit that was sent to us for CDC to actually do the lab test that confirmed COVID-19. Let me explain to you what a person can expect if they come into a doctor's office to be tested for COVID-19. So if the healthcare provider thinks that a person meets the criteria as a person under investigation for COVID-19, that person will receive a nasal swab, an oral swab, and they will have saliva taken. They will have those specimens collected, and then they will be sent to a laboratory to confirm whether or not they have COVID-19.
And so the equipment used to collect those samples, is that specific to COVID-19, or that could be just more standard medical equipment that is readily accessible?
Yes. So on our website, FloridaHealth.gov, under healthcare providers tabs, it goes over the clinical screening tools, and it provides additional information on the types of materials that it takes to test somebody for COVID-19.
And are those in plentiful supply with the Department of Health, as you've checked with healthcare providers?
So those supplies are actually used from the healthcare provider standpoint. So healthcare providers, they have the materials to collect the specimens to be tested by public health laboratories, if that is their lab of choice.
Gotcha. And then today we could hear from the Department of Health that commercial laboratories have been approved to actually take those specimens and conduct the COVID-19 tests. Is that correct?
Today, the Florida Department of Health will work with those private providers who have received clearance from the FDA to begin commercial testing, and we will work with them to ensure that we have a good system for collecting that data and working in partnership to prevent COVID-19 in Florida.
Doctor, what could that mean for the capacity of testing for COVID-19 in Florida?
That's a great question. So as commercial labs come on to conduct tests for COVID-19, that is increased capacity for testing for COVID-19 in Florida.
Can you give us a sense of the scale of that increase compared to the three Department of Health labs that are exclusively doing the testing now, as you mentioned, compared to what could be by, what, the end of today, even on this Friday?
Yes, it just means that there are additional sites that are conducting tests, so that could increase the capacity as well as the time it takes to receive test results back.
Right now, that time is, what, 24, 48 hours, at least to take a presumptive case to the CDC and back? Could that time shrink?
So right now, the approximate time for test results from our public health laboratories at the Florida Department of Health is 24 to 48 hours.
And if these new commercial labs come online, what could that timeline be?
It's just dependent on the amount of tests received at that given day and the situation that's going on at that time in Florida.
quick question about the cost of those tests at the private labs. What does that look like? How different is that from the Department of Health in terms of from the patient's standpoint?
The Florida Department of Health cost for the laboratory portion of the COVID-19 testing, it has no cost associated for the laboratory portion of the test. I do not have information on the individual cost for commercial labs for their testing.
Speaking with Dr. Shamariel Robertson, she is the Florida Deputy Secretary for Health. Now, the two commercial laboratories she referred to are LabCorp and Quest Diagnostics.
Let's bring in Dalena Miller. She's a reporter for Health News Florida at WUSF in Tampa, and Chad Nielsen, MPH. He's director of accreditation and infection prevention with UF Health in Jacksonville. Dalena, let's start with you. The Trump administration today actually signed an $8.3 billion emergency package to help with the coronavirus outbreak. Some of those billions will make their way to state agencies like our own Florida Department of Health. How critical will this support be, do you think? Because we're hearing plenty of complaints from patients and those who are concerned about the response to the virus, that they might have the disease, but they've had trouble getting tested, that the state might not have enough kits, that they've been too slow to respond. What are your thoughts?
So Florida's going to get about $27 million of that deal. Right now, we don't know the specifics about where it's going to go and where it's going to be used for, but testing and preparation are definitely part of that. It'll probably be divvied out to different communities and counties, depending on how many cases have come through. So just about any problem can be solved with enough resources, but it's a matter of how many resources you can get, how much money you can get. And so this is going to allow, presumably, for a lot more testing. Yesterday, Governor Ron DeSantis said that the federal government is also sending tens of thousands of coronavirus testing kits to the state, and their final destinations are going to be hospitals and doctors' offices. So the hope is that a lot more people are going to be able to get tested, but the testing requirements are very stringent. Right now, when you call the Florida Department of Health hotline, they've set up a specific hotline for people who have questions and concerns about the coronavirus. They give you a three-step process. They tell you the first step is to go to your primary care doctor. Not everybody has one, nor is everybody insured. That person knows your medical history best, can tell you whether testing might be needed. And then you can reach out to the county health department, who will prioritize testing requests based on recent travel to risk level two or three countries, or exposure to people to a recently traveled to those countries.
Okay. Chad Nielsen, UF Health Jax. Are there not enough kits? And how are hospitals like yours going to take up some of the load, given what the health department is dealing with in terms of an overwhelming crush of concern and people needing help, and they don't have the resources yet that they obviously are hoping to get from the federal government?
Yeah, thanks for having me on today. I think as a hospital, we've been largely in the dark throughout this process. We're hearing that more kits are arriving. We're hearing that the health department are going to get more resources, but we're not really seeing that in practice yet. We eagerly are awaiting information on how we can do this better. UF Health Jacksonville, we have over 80 plus clinics spanning from Georgia to throughout St. John's and Flagler County, and we've been in charge of trying to get all of our providers at all 80 plus clinics on the same page on who's appropriate to test, what that process looks like. And when we hear folks say, we'll call the local health department, we are very close to our Duval County epidemiology folks, and they just don't have the capacity to answer all of these questions that they're getting flooded in from the public, much less providers who have legitimate concerns.
So the demand is overwhelming, Dalena. At the same time, there was an international health conference in Orlando that President Trump was going to speak at this week. It's been canceled for the first time in 58 years due to concerns over coronavirus. We're also seeing other events and festivals around the state being canceled just as we head into festival season. So in addition to public health agencies and physicians really grappling with how to combat the spread of this disease, we're also starting to see more shutdowns of large events with lots of people planning to attend. How effective is this response, do you think, in hopefully at least halting the spread of more cases of coronavirus in Florida?
It's really hard to say because it's a very contagious disease. It's very easy to pass along to people through these respiratory droplets. So a lot of people are perhaps being, overly cautious. But we have no idea how many people in the state could actually be infected, right? Because this is something that you could possibly transmit 2 weeks before symptoms show. So the family of coronaviruses can last on hard surfaces anywhere from a couple days to a few weeks. We have no idea where COVID-19 falls into that time frame. So a lot of these big events where a lot of people are going to be, where, hot water may not always be the most accessible, where hand sanitizer stations might run out quickly. People are just trying to be overly cautious to mm-hmm. make sure that they're doing everything they can to prevent as much contact with other people as possible.
Sure. 305-995-1800. Your questions about coronavirus. Let us know your thoughts right now. Dan is in Fort Lauderdale. Hi, Dan. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi.
Go ahead, Dan.
I'm being overly cautious.
Uh-huh.
I'm being overly cautious, and I don't think there's anything wrong with being overly cautious, especially for someone like me who works in the fitness industry, comes into contact with surfaces that have thousands of people using them every day.
Yeah.
In multiple fitness centers, and many of my clients are in their 70s. Several of them have chronic asthma, COPD, kidney failure. My big concern is, what about the accessibility to testing for healthcare workers, people in the hospitality industry, people in the service industry like myself, who I'm not worried about getting it and dying. I'm worried about getting it and killing somebody else.
I got you. Thank you, Dan. Chad Nielsen, people want more access to testing. That is clear.
Yeah, and we're really relying on our State Department of Health and our federal authorities to make that happen. We operate our series of clinics and our locations here in Jacksonville, but he's absolutely right. We have a lot of people who want answers, want access to these tests, rightfully so. He's in a high-risk area, and we want people to get that access. We just need more help from the state.
Daylena Miller, the pressure is on the state, isn't it? The public is getting louder and louder about their concerns.
Absolutely. There have been questions from the get-go because the state knew about the first two cases about 24 hours before there was any kind of public announcement. So there's a lot of concern from people reaching out to us that they're not giving us as much information as they might actually have.
And, you know, at the same time, Chad, we don't want to panic people. This is a real health concern. Let me quickly point out, though, that this winter alone, the flu has sickened 13 million Americans and killed 6,600 people. In a bad year, influenza kills 61,000 Americans.
Yeah, that's correct.
Are we panicking over coronavirus when every year lots of people die of the flu?
Yeah, I think that's valid perspective. And one of the main reasons why I think there's a lot of panic over this is that it's new. We haven't seen this before in our country or in the world in general. And anytime there's a new virus or a new yeast or bacteria or something that can harm people, we have to go on high alert until we figure out more through research. You know, what does this actually look like in terms of harming folks and how bad it can get? So we're on high alert because we haven't seen it before. As more cases continue to pop up in the states and as well around the world, we're going to have more research and more ability to know, are we overreacting or mm-hmm. are we underreacting? That takes time.
Yeah, better prepared than not prepared,
absolutely.
I think is how most people feel. And how do you feel about this? What are your questions about coronavirus? This is the Florida Roundup, and we're speaking with health experts about this and taking your calls and tweets. Keep those calls coming. We're going to continue the conversation in just a few minutes. It's 305-995-1800 from wherever you happen to be in Florida to call us up. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup, and thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. We're talking about the coronavirus here in Florida. As of noon today, when we went on the air here live on this Friday, the latest information from the Florida Department of Health has three Florida residents testing positive for COVID-19. A fourth person in Florida who's not a resident has tested positive also, and the tests of 51 others, according to the Department of Health, are still pending. 305-995-1800, our phone number. How has the corona virus affected your daily life, your routine, if you changed your routine at all. 305-995-1800 or at Florida Roundup on Twitter. Delina Miller is a reporter with our partner station in Tampa, WUSF. She also reports for Health News Florida. And Chad Nielsen is the Director of Accreditation and Infection Prevention at the University of Florida Health Jacksonville. Chad, a tweet here that I think is best directed at you. A listener writing, "What I still have yet to hear is how long it takes for someone to get over a COVID-19 infection. This seems particularly important since people can be asymptomatic and given the dearth of availability of testing." What do we know?
Yeah, so what we know at this point is based on our guidance from the CDC and what we're seeing cases worldwide. We put everyone on these 14-day quarantine periods once we know they're positive, with the idea that the highest shedding is going to be while the person is symptomatic and within 14 days of those symptoms starting. So that's what we know right now. With more cases and more research, we'll have to adjust what that looks like in the future. It might be 3 weeks, it might be four weeks, but for now we're seeing 2 weeks.
Lots of tweets. Here's another one for you, Chad. Can you explain why one set of doctors can't issue testing parameters to all the other ones? Why does it need to be a kit? Do they need special lab equipment? If the federal government gives a lot of money to Florida, as Delina said, about $27 million, that's great. But it won't do any good if you don't have the correct supplies. Isn't that right?
Yes, correct. So it's actually having the tests in hand. You know, the White House has recently said that they will fall short of the 1 million tests being available. We can have all the money in the world, but if we don't have access to purchase those tests or be transferred those tests into the hands of the providers and the hospitals and the health departments who need it, then the money does no good.
Chad and Delina, the way I understood it from the Department of Health earlier in our program was taking the specimens doesn't require any special laboratory equipment. It's when those specimens wind up at the Department of Health laboratories, that's where the testing kits and the testing kit supply concern comes into play. Is that right, Chad?
Yeah, that's correct. The equipment and sort of the tools needed to actually take the samples from the patient are stuff that we readily use in health departments and hospitals around the nation. The actual test kits that they're speaking towards are the reagents and the things that actually are used by our molecular lab personnel to perform that testing.
We are speaking with Delina Miller, a reporter with WUSF and Health News Florida, and Chad Nielsen, who runs the infection prevention efforts at UF Health Jacksonville. And if you are thinking about coronavirus, have questions, concerns, now's the time to call us up. 305-995-1800 to join the Florida Roundup from across the state this Friday. Tricia is in Venice, Florida. Hey, Tricia.
Hey, Tricia.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just calling in regard to antibacterial wipes and hand sanitizer. There seems to be a bit of a frenzy in terms of people going out and clearing shelves and purchasing them. And I don't know, for my question is, if this is a virus, would an antibacterial wipe or antibacterial soap actually help? I'm under the impression that bacteria-based diseases are different.
That's right. Yeah. And this is such a common question, Tricia. I'm so glad you asked that because you're absolutely right. You can't buy hand sanitizer in stores right now. People have bought it all out. Delina Miller, people are going on Facebook and posting recipes for their own homebrew hand sanitizers that they can make at home. Can you please explain for Tricia and everyone listening what's effective against preventing the spread of COVID-19 and what isn't?
Sure. So hand washing is the most effective way to prevent the spread. Why? Because coronavirus is an enveloped virus, which means basically that the outer cell wall is made of lipids. So soap and detergent break that greasy fat down. And hand washing has the added benefit of getting rid of debris and soap and dirt and things that are on your hands. So hand sanitizer and wipes are also very effective. They need to be at least 60% alcohol. Again, we don't know how long this virus lasts on surfaces, but we do know that, you know, it is spread through that mucus that's not that saliva. You know, we want to stay not super close to people. We want to make sure that we're avoiding shaking hands, that we're avoiding doing things that transfer those bodily fluids. But hand washing is the number one way to prevent it.
We should point out, right, that wipes, use actual hand sanitizing wipes. Don't do some kind of homemade bathtub gin kind of version of that, right?
They're popular
Absolutely.
Right now.
And
yeah. But don't do
it. And there are some dangers. Absolutely. And there are some dangers with essential oils, too. You want to make sure you're not burning your skin by using those improperly.
Tito's Vodka actually had to issue a statement about this, Chad, that they are not sanctioning this kind of homemade sanitizer cocktail.
Yeah, that's primarily because Tito's is only 40% alcohol and not 60%.
Okay.
But we definitely don't want people making home batch versions with over-the-counter liquors to do this. But I'll also add that the EPA has recently released a list of common household cleaners that are effective against COVID-19. And that's being widely distributed online, and it includes Lysol, Clorox wipes, the normal type of things that you can pick up at your local supermarket. And so if you have questions about what you can use to clean, and that should go beyond just COVID-19 season.
And let me jump in and ask you both, too. People have asked us many times about whether masks are effective, and there's some misconception about that, Daylena, as well. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, there's... Sure. So your standard sort of flimsy paper masks that you see people wearing are not super effective in preventing the spread of this virus. And it has the unfortunate side effect of causing us to touch our faces more because we're adjusting those masks. You have to have an N95 respirator or higher rating for it to be effective. And Governor Ron DeSantis is saying that, you know, he's recommending that people do not go out and buy these en masse. The general public doesn't need them currently. We want to make sure that we're not contributing to shortages for healthcare professionals. And he also said the Florida Department of Health has stockpiled about 150,000 of those masks.
305-995-1800. Concerns, questions about coronavirus in Tallahassee. Sarah on line three. You've been patient. Thanks, Sarah. Go ahead.
Hi. Just curious if most folks are able to, who have this virus and are able to survive it, hopefully, will that confer immunity, or will we be carriers or able to get sick or be able to get sick again? Do we have answers to that yet?
Good question, Sarah. Chad Nielsen with UF Health Jacksonville, what can you tell us?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I think what we have to look at right now is what are known about coronaviruses as a family of viruses. And what we do know is, yes, people can be reinfected by a coronavirus. There's several different strains. And so it's too early right now to tell what COVID-19 looks like in terms of reinfection. But I think it's a very reasonable question to ask. And I think with more time and research, we're going to figure that answer out.
Here's a tweet from Brandon. Are hospitals or health departments posthumously testing for COVID-19? Either deaths that were attributed to flu or hospitalizations that were released after recovery? My guess would be no, but Chad?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. At this time, I'm not aware of any hospital that's posthumously tested for the virus. Typically speaking, we're trying to identify folks on the front end who might be at risk for it. But that's an interesting question, one that we'll certainly have to keep an eye out.
You know, there's a woman here in Jacksonville who recently moved to Florida from Portland, Oregon. Daylena, I'll direct this one to you. She moved from Portland, Oregon and had symptoms that she thought indicated coronavirus. She went to a local hospital and tried to get tested, and they told her that no testing would be given to her unless her condition got serious enough that she required hospitalization. And basically sent her home. Her story is on WJCT's website. So that's one anecdotal report we've heard, and many others like it, where patients are just having trouble accessing the testing that they need. I think it's why we're sensing the anxiety among some Floridians out there right now.
Absolutely. And because we have so few tests available currently, we don't know where the tests we're supposed to be getting are going to go. They're really trying to narrow it down to people who have higher risk factors, like having traveled abroad or been exposed to those who have traveled abroad. But that leaves a lot of people with, symptoms that are very, very vague. These are very, sort of general respiratory symptoms. And so the flu's going on right now. There's a lot of other illnesses that, that people could be experiencing that are not coronavirus. But people's fear are elevated.
Jeff in Jacksonville on line five. You're up next. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hey, good morning. Just a real quick question and a comment as well on top of that. The question is, if you use flu as a marker, as a level, like just call it one, is the COVID-19 in regards to two aspects, mortality and communicability, is it more communicable, less communicable, and if so, by a factor of 2, 100, 5, 0.5, what? And same with mortality. So just try so we can get a rough idea if you even have the data for that yet.
Sure. Before you get to the second piece, just before this one runs away here, Chad Nielsen with UF Health Jax. I mean, there's been some very early testing about some of these questions coming out of China. What have we learned?
Yeah. So coming out of China right now, they're looking at a 3.4% case fatality rate with this virus. However, if you look at that fatality rate versus flu, flu is about 0.1% fatality rate. So you're talking a 20 times difference. However, the key aspect is that with COVID-19, the majority of the fatalities are happening in immunosuppressed individuals and those who have comorbidities and are over the age of 70. It's actually a very targeted demographic that we're seeing for the fatality. When it comes to communicability, the very, very early aspect of that is starting to show that it might be, you know, roughly 2 or 3 times as easy to communicate person to person than flu right now. There's lots of infectious disease statistics involved with coming up with that number, and it's all very early. But it looks like it's easier to transmit between people than flu, and it's got a fatality rate that is much higher than flu, but in a targeted section of that population.
All right, Jeff, you're still on the line. Your thoughts here.
Real quick, thank you. That's wonderful. I'm glad you addressed the whole age issue, age and comorbidity issue. Second thing is, as a possible benefit, I don't know if anybody's talked about this as a policy issue. Do we see any of the heightened ability or heightened awareness of people on washing hands and doing all the distancing of interpersonal contact? Is it having any effect on flu transmission?
Got it, Jeff. Great question. We got to leave it there because we're tight on time. Chad, what do you think?
Yeah, very early. At this point, what we know, at least here with our hospital system, is that flu cases have been dropping in number really since late December, early January. So we're sort of already on the tail end of our flu season, so we're not seeing a lot of flu, but it's probably just because the seasonality of it.
Chad Nielsen, Director of Accreditation and Infection Prevention at the University of Florida Health Jacksonville. Thank you for your expertise and sharing it with us here at Jackson. Delina Miller,
thank you.
Health News Florida reporter from WUSF in Tampa. Delina, always great to have you on the program as well. Thanks for sharing your reporting.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
Well, just one short week ago, there were 7 Democrats running for their party's presidential nomination. Today, there are just 3. Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, and Tulsi Gabbard. And let's face it, it's a two-way race between Sanders and Biden as Floridians begin early voting. The former vice president doesn't even have a field office here in Florida, but recent polling shows him way out in front in the Democratic primary, and his campaign has collected a slew of high-profile endorsements here in the Sunshine State. Right now, we're pleased to welcome one of them. It's Representative Al Lawson, Jr., Democrat of North Florida. Congressman, it's good to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So you are endorsing Joe Biden for president. What drove that decision?
Well, I think, you know, just judging under the Obama administration, VP Biden was a great advocate of equal rights for all, and, you know, especially affordable health care, which is really big, and putting hard-working Americans back to work. I mean, it was a no-nonsense approach for me. And then he did everything he possibly could in trying to bring some common sense to the gun reform. And what we've had in Florida, you know, has been tremendous, you know. And so as a result, he was just more stable. And I was really glad that he was someone who would try to unite us in America instead of divide us, like the current president, you know, is someone who can work on both sides. You have Democrats and Republicans, and so you want someone who would not just ignore the Republicans if you get in office, but be willing to work on both sides, and you make good legislation like that.
Now, a recent poll shows Joe Biden winning the Florida primary by double digits. That said, what's your message to supporters who will cast a primary ballot for Senator Bernie Sanders? They would like to see this race go in a more progressive direction.
Well, you know, one of the things, if you notice, Florida is really concerned about some of the things, especially in the South Florida area, that Bernie Sanders had to say about Fidel Castro. Some of the way that he thought that he was doing good, which really turned off a lot of Hispanic, Cuban Democrats, and even some of the Republican Democrats because of his position. And also his take with the Jewish community, which is a big voting block here in, who he happened to be Jewish, in Florida, when now you probably found that Ted Deutsch, Deborah Wasserman Schultz, and many of the other Jewish congressional people also are going to Biden. I think he made a great mistake in that, and that's one of the reasons that you probably see that Florida, you know, and he's done well. He's doing well with African Americans throughout the state, especially here in North Florida. So as a result, it just doesn't seem much of a pathway in Florida for Sanders.
A quick question before we go to break. The black unemployment rate is at historic lows. What's the economic argument for African-American voters in Florida to cast their ballot for Biden?
Well, I think that one of the things that happened is the unemployment situation started under the Biden administration when he was in there with Obama. And so that is one of the reasons why we are seeing those results now, which is very good. And even the current president speaks about it and talks about it and says, look what I have done, instead of saying, this happened under the Obama administration, now I'm reaping the benefits of seeing what happened. But probably no one is going to say that. But that's what really happened. It's something that
hold that thought, Congressman Al Lawson. We are going to take more calls for you in a moment. It's 305-995-1800. The Florida Roundup will be right back.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks again for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. We're taking your calls about the Florida primary. It's March 17th, but people have already started early voting. Who will get your support? 305-995-1800 tweets to at Florida Roundup as we continue our conversation with Representative Al Lawson Jr., Democrat of North Florida. He has endorsed Joe Biden for president. Also joining us now, in a moment, we'll have Juan Penalosa, Executive Director of the Florida Democratic Party. Congressman, if you could expand on the thought you were discussing before the break, why there is such strong African-American support for Joe Biden. Certainly, we saw that on Super Tuesday, and it sounds as though you expect that to continue here in Florida.
Well, one of the things is, African-American really had a great deal of interaction with the Obama administration and with the vice president. And the vice president really visited in the African American community to let him know that he was working hard for them and, all over Florida and in other states, especially in South Carolina and different places. So Joe was the reason for it. And I have known his family for a very long time. And so as a result, it was an easy decision for me. I've had the opportunity to visit with them up in Delaware when they have their family reunions. And at the same time, has realized that, here's a guy that's going to get things done. Here's a guy that can bring stability to America, because that's one thing that we're liking. And we want to make sure that, he's for the blue-collar person and for the middle class so that, Wall Street's been really benefiting, and so we want to make sure that Main Street benefit. And I think he's the type of person that really understands that, and people feel comfortable that he's going to protect our Social Security. He's going to get us affordable health care because he's working on it. He's going to do something to lower student loan problem that we're having here in America, so people are not bombarded with it for the rest of their lives. So as a result, he's just someone you can trust. And that's what we need. And since America is so divided now, especially even while being up in Congress, he will have a great deal to do with bringing people back together and working for the good for every man, woman, and child.
Congressman, hold on the line here. Juan Peñalosa is joining us. He is the executive director of the Florida Democratic Party. Juan, welcome back to Florida Public Radio. Let me ask you about essentially a political infrastructure question. It is a two-person race here in Florida. Neither Bernie Sanders nor Joe Biden have any field offices in Florida. Why not?
Yeah, well, I think what our candidates are looking at the Florida Democratic Party to do.
Juan, I'm sorry to interrupt you. It's really hard to hear you. If I could have you speak up just a little bit louder for me.
How's this?
That's a little bit better. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, excellent. So what all candidates, not just Senator Sanders and Vice President Biden, have looked to the Florida Democratic Party to do is to build that infrastructure. So we began building our field operation to hand over to whoever the eventual nominee is last July. We have over 20 field offices.
Juan, I'm sorry. It's still very hard to hear you. The level for the phone line, for whatever reason, is really low. I'm going to put you back on hold. If we can get it fixed, we'll come back to you. Congressman Lawson, what about the lack of a field office for the candidate you've endorsed here, Vice President Joe Biden here, is where, early voting begins, has begun in some
it's
places
already
and
underway,
is about to
yeah.
begin. Yeah, in other places on Saturday.
Well, one of the things I think it was a lack of resources. You know, but now the resources are coming in. There's no question now. I think that what he's going to do is have many field offices all over the state. You know, when you're running for president, you see the sums of money that many of these candidates have been bringing in. But now that's beginning to change, you know. And so as a result, I don't think we're going to go lacking in the next couple of weeks without seeing these field offices pop up. And we certainly hope that the constituents out there realize is that not only the office, but even coming to Florida and through many of us, we've been out putting this message out from Pensacola to Key West. And,
you know,
as a result, but no.
And Congressman Lawson, it was remarkable on Super Tuesday to notice how Joe Biden won a number of states where he had barely visited or not visited at all. Maybe had one field office or just a mere smattering of a presence in some of the states that he won. He is leading Senator Sanders in Florida, according to at least one poll, by 49 points. And so field offices may not matter, at least when you look at the parameters of the race so far. And what do you attribute that to, particularly here in Florida?
Well, I contribute in Florida. Many people are very familiar with him in Florida for 8 years that he served, you know, as the vice president and the number of trips that was made to Florida. But also, I think that Senator Sanders is kind of out of touch with the Jewish community, even being Jewish in Florida, as well as with the Hispanic, the Cuban community in Florida. And I think that's what led to that. It's been because of his own conversations about what's going on in America. And so I think that Senator Sanders promised everything. And, you know, everything is free. But people have to work for it, and the government need to be better run. And I think that's one of the things that you have the confidence in Joe Biden, that he can bring people together. We could have a more efficient government because it's going to be for everyone.
Senator Sanders has talked about health care and student loans and whatnot, but paid for with raising taxes on wealthy Americans. Let me just remind folks that you are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Juan Peñalosa is back with us, executive director of the Florida Democratic Party. Juan, I think we got a better phone connection now. Let me ask you about kind of the process here, as it is clearly a two-person race right now. The role of the Democratic Party, as Melissa pointed out, the polls show that the former vice president has an enormous margin against Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders.
Sure. First up, thanks for having me. It's always great to be back. And hello to Congressman Lawson. I'll be seeing you very soon. But in terms of infrastructure of the Florida Democratic Party, you spoke about field offices and field staff. I think both Senator Sanders and Vice President Biden are looking to the Florida Democratic Party to be able to build the infrastructure that is needed in Florida and hand over our nominee once we do have a nominee. And we've been doing that. So while you pointed out that Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders may not have field offices right now, the Florida Democratic Party has 21 field offices across the state that we have paid field organizers and tens of thousands of volunteers working out of to prepare the state for our eventual Democratic nominee, to talk about issues that matter, and like access to affordable health care, like an economy where, you know, all of us are able to succeed and we don't give away free taxes to big companies like Amazon who pay billions, who make billions of dollars in profits and balance those deficits on the backs of middle-class.
Let me ask you, Juan, about that economic issue.
Sure.
And my colleague Melissa asked Congressman Lawson about this. The black unemployment rate nationwide is 5.8%.
Yep.
Florida's unemployment rate is near historic lows. Average weekly earnings for blacks have been rising faster than overall wages during this first Trump administration. So what is the economic argument to those particular voters in Florida that can turn out and swing an election?
Sure. I mean, I am happy that people are back to work, and I think that every Democrat is happy that people are back to work. What I think the inequality lies, both in the African-American community, Hispanic community, and among, middle-income Americans all across the country, is you got to work two or three jobs just to be able to put food over food on the table, a roof over your head, and pay for your medical bills. And that is what folks like Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden are advocating, is we create an economy that gives us all the ability to succeed. That's what the American dream is. And right now, under this Trump economy, this Trump tax plan, you see corporations like Amazon or Halliburton pay $0 in taxes on billions of dollars in profits. And then, again, you see President Trump, who, again, yesterday said that in order to balance the budget, he was going to cut Medicare. And he's been very public and transparent about what another 4 years of the Trump presidency means. It means less access to affordable health care, and it means an economy that works for those at the very top. And if those in the middle class and working class folks in Florida get, you know, a little bit, then that's enough for him. And Vice President Biden, Senator Sanders, and Democrats all running all across the state in Florida say that is not enough for
let's,
Florida
let's,
families.
With just a minute left or so in the show, 1 minute left in the show, Congressman Al Lawson, will you be campaigning in Florida or any of your colleagues with Joe Biden?
Oh, absolutely. It's the right thing to do. Florida really kind of determines what happens in this nation. And so a person comes out of Florida that wins big, you know, most likely become the president of the United States.
I would agree with that.
I think that is something that you both can agree on. And Tom, certainly we've seen that many times in the past. So it's good to have both you gentlemen on to talk about the campaign. As Tom said, early voting is underway in parts of the state already and more parts of the state on Saturday. And let me just say, Tom, some people listening might have gone out and early voted for candidates that have dropped off the ballot since. So some people might be waiting to Election Day.
It has been quite the week for a consolidation of candidates ahead of the March 17th official primary here in Florida. Juan Peñalosa, the executive director of Florida Democrats, thanks for joining us. And Congressman Al Lawson, thanks for your time today as well.
Well, that's our show. Thanks for listening to the Florida Roundup, produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Denise Royal are the producers.
Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming and our Technical Director this hour. WLRN's Director of Radio Operations is Peter Mertz. Engineering help we get each week from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. Our theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Have a great weekend. We'll be back next Friday at noon.